Mashallah, that's really nice to hear. But like you said, I mean, even when I grew up in the West, you know, I went to college, I felt like everything was superficial. I mean, a female had to look the image of perfect or at least seductive to the opposite gender. And when they felt like a Muslim woman was taking herself out of that role, they thought, why would you do that? I mean, you know, that's what a female's about. But like after you converted, a article was published in the Daily Mail. It said, why are so many British career women converting to Islam? And that article, you know, it got like hundreds of responses, you know, people commenting on the page and people later on discussing it in other forums and TV shows. I saw it being discussed as well. And many people said, you know, these people are British career women, they're successful. Why would they want to convert to Islam and choose to wear the veil? And I think it was an article written by Eve Ahmed, who's a writer. So, you know, what would be your response to that? I mean.
I saw those articles and I saw some of the programs, and I thought it's first. My first response was brilliant. We're discussing this. How interesting. By the way, I think the Daily Mail had had that interview for 2 or 3 years and never printed it until now.
Really?
Yes, because it was positive. Because I know some of the women interviewed for that, and they said, you know, we're all very positive about converting to Islam, but the Daily Mail didn't want that. Well, finally, because news overtook their agenda. Or then, not their agenda, their natural reticence about this issue, they had to print it. So that just shows that if there isn't a media agenda about women opting out of this, I'm a sensual person, I must be wanted by men agenda, then there's certainly a reticence to discuss it. So I really think that what is going on is it's actually seen as an act of rebellion and rejection. If you are not the sort of woman who buys into the idea of liberation as being the right to wear as little as possible, as often as possible, in all situations as possible. We've really built ourselves, there's a saying in English, you paint yourself into a corner. What started, I think, in the 50s and 60s as women saying, okay, we're entering the workforce here in Britain. Let us. And then the glamour that came in with the 60s and 70s, the sexual revolution came in, and everything sort of got a little bit confused about where the family stood in that. And women's relationship with self-respect in a public place and with themselves got very confused. And again, it really does all come down to motherhood. If we're not actually aiming to be pillars of our society, then we have to be aiming for something else. And the other aim that in the West we've really switched to is to be as sexy for as long as possible, as stimulating to men as long as possible, as successful in our jobs as long as possible, and putting our family, our lives, and our community second. And it's very hard. I think a lot of women really want to jump back. But we, again, just calling it back isn't right. Jump into the fold of being a better person and more interesting and more able just to speak with this rather than this.
Yeah, that's true.
I really think they do, but where offers you that? Not our society.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, that's so true what you said, because even when I was going to university, I felt like, you know, some people may say the veil may not be approachable, but then you don't get approached by the wrong people and you get approached by the right people. And even, you know, there was a young man in my university last year, and he said, he goes, you know, I don't see you in that way. I don't see you as, you know, he used to have intellectual debates with me. And that's what really we're aiming to do, is have intellectual debates without someone feeling seductive towards you or in the wrong way.
That's right, yeah. I mean, that's a self-confidence. I think my personal journey, well, I didn't know I was on a journey towards Islam first and foremost. I've been working in the Middle East, and my respect for the family structure and for the love and for the peace and calm that the people exuded grew, and my interest in how Muslim women lived grew. And then a few examples kept coming my way. I remember about a year and a half ago meeting a young female engineer at a major British university of Middle Eastern origin who had been wearing the burqa for a month. And I said, wow, the burqa, what were you wearing before? She said, jeans and t-shirt. I said, you went from jeans and t-shirt into the burqa. She said, yeah. And I said, well, why? Did you get married? And she went, oh, I knew you were going to ask that. Because, of course, we can't make the decision on our own. And I said, well, forgive me. She said, I'm married, but my husband whilst respecting modesty, definitely didn't ask me. So what happened? She said, in my course, it's highly technical. It's very mathematical. It's very specific. And I was the only woman on the course because it's that high. No one was listening to me. The men were looking at me in a way I didn't like. When I went up to give a presentation, they would either talk, or I noticed that they would ask me questions afterwards that related to who I am. In other words, do you want to come out with me? She said, even the lecturer I felt was looking at me in a way that disrespected my level of intelligence. She said, now I wear the burqa, everybody sits up and listens. She said, because they're... And she said, and I said, how do you present through a burqa? Should I have to work really hard? And I like working hard. Now, that's not to say that every woman should wear the burqa and work that hard to make her point, but can we see how male disrespect and our own disrespect for ourselves can make women go, how do I escape? Because there's another kind of prison in Britain right now, which is the prison of spending 40% of your earnings on clothes you don't need, to look a way that you shouldn't have to, and spend, you know, £50 a month on hair products that you shouldn't need to, and then spend less time on working at your course, at your work, at becoming an intelligent person.
That's true. I mean, we've seen the documentaries broadcast on Channel 4 and all those channels about, you know, young females going into surgery, plastic surgery, or, you know, Botox, or I don't know what they're called, but it pushes young females to go into that to try to look the image of perfect when that's not what we should be aiming towards.
I think the other thing that's going on that we really should discuss is that it's a question I get asked by Western interviewers is, well, what do you feel about women who are subjugated? Women in small villages through, you know, they say through Islam, who are forced not to drive, in quite big cities as well around the world, not to drive and not to go to work. I would say any woman who is forced into living a way that is not respectful to her, that's not Islam, that's men acting badly towards women.
Yeah.
That's what I'd say, and they have my support and my unstinting support in their fight for freedom and respect in their societies and in all societies. Yeah. What I needed to find out was that Islam? And just by working in the Muslim world for the last 5 years, I can see it's not.
It's amazing, but that's great. But, you know, many people, I'm sure many of our audience want to ask you that, when you put on the veil, how was that transition? You know, how was that transition been? So, you know, how would you answer that?
Well, I spent a couple of years battling with people about wearing a scarf at work because I said I'm not a Muslim, but I have to show respect when I was working on for several TV channels, which I did. And to suddenly then, you know, the first thing is Islam is about humility and saying, I submit to you, Alan, not to anyone else. And so I really had to kind of humble myself from going, oh, I'm actually choosing to wear the scarf when I battled against wearing the scarf for myself as a non-Muslim. And I thought, well, okay, you have to swallow that one. So really there was a humility problem on my part, which I overcame. And then the main question was, I remember I got off the plane coming back from Iran, and this is interesting because a lot of the women on that plane were taking their scarves off and doing
that.
Their hair. And I suddenly didn't want to take my scarf off. And I thought, what is going on? I'm going to land in Heathrow, people are going to look at me, and I don't know why I'm doing this. Because I felt a change in me that I wanted to be reminded about Islam. And the scarf reminds me of that. So it's really a very personal thing. It reminds me of a path that at that time I didn't know I was on. But I remember seeing a colleague at Press TV, and I thought, oh no, I don't want him to see me in the scarf. And I thought he'd be happy, he'd say, hello, sister. But again, it's humility. It's about man's expectations. Colleagues' expectations don't matter. What are you responding to? Are you responding to a higher call? Are you responding to an interest in things that aren't physical? Or are you trying to prove yourself on the basic everyday level?
That's true. That's very interesting, and I'm sure like many people were thinking, how did you feel when you put it on?
But and then there was the day when I went to my children's school with a scarf on, I said to my girls, you know, I think I might be a Muslim. I think I might be Muslim. And they went, okay. I said, so I'm going to wear the scarf. And they said, well, it's raining anyway, so no one will notice. You know what kids are like. But I got to the school, and this Britain, people don't really look. People don't really look. So I was relieved about that. But the change was in me. The change was, I don't have my hair to rely on now to swing about or to worry about. And I'm making a statement to the world. But you know what I found? The world doesn't care about me that much in that way. So this is a really personal, it's an internal cleansing.
Yeah. I mean, like me, I don't know how long I've been wearing the headscarf for, a very long time. And I think that many people think that looks matter and you have to show your hair and show your body to get accepted, when in fact people accept someone in the long run because of their inner self.
Exactly that. So what I wasn't getting on the train was what I wasn't looking for, which was maybe making eye contact with a man who thought I had nice hair, or you know, trying to be a single woman somehow. I was very much more self-contained. And so now I make eye contact with Muslim women and say salam. And, oh, it was so nice yesterday. Muslim men with their wives were standing up for me and my daughters. Salam, sister. And it was like, wow. It was like every carriage we went into and kids were going. And just that respect within the community is there. So that's nice.
Definitely. And another issue, you know, it's amazing hearing your side of this. You know, it's just, it shows us that the real reason why people put on the veil. But many people say that the veil kind of prevents women from seeking education or going further in life, and it's like it will prevent them from going further in their career as well. Do you feel like the hijab is a prevents a female from going further?
Right, I haven't done this at 17. So there's a really important question here. For all of our laws on integration and religious rights in the UK today, what you're really asking is, does it affect young women in education? And does it affect the way young women are seen at work? I think it still does. And I can tell you now that as a journalist of 13 years, I've lost 2 jobs this week because I wear a scarf.
Really?
And I'm not willing to go any further with that yet because I need to prove it. But I've been dropped by 2 agencies who I've worked for a really long time.